Hi, welcome to the first videotaped MJF chat on Petri.com. My name is Mary Jo Foley. I am the community magnet at Petri.com. And today I have a very special guest here at Microsoft Ignite, Jared Spataro, who is the corporate vice president of Microsoft 365. Jared, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me here.
So we have a number of questions for you that came from our readers. I also added a couple of my own. So I wanted to start out with what I think is one of the biggest announcements here at the show, Project Cortex.
Yes.
And when I first read about this, it kind of reminded me of Delve, which basically turned into Microsoft Search. I wanted you to explain a little more how this is different from Delve.
First, I'll start by talking about how it's the same, which is it is based on the Microsoft Graph. And Delve was absolutely kind of like a reference app based on the Graph as well.
Right.
The Graph wasn't as rich at that time.
Yep.
And Delve in some ways was an app looking for a problem. You know, it was surfacing a lot of information, but the question was to what end?
Right.
You know, what were we trying to do?
Right.
Well, with Project Cortex, we know what problems, like specifically what we're focused on in a couple of use cases is upskilling and helping people to kind of get up to speed on things that the organization knows about that they may not know about. So that's kind of these cards, these topic cards and topic pages.
Yeah.
And then we are very specifically looking at how we can take your content and turn it into what I call an interactive content repository, where you can actually interact with it, ask the content questions, and it gives you answers back.
Yeah, nice.
So when I started learning more about this, what impressed me is this isn't an app and a service in the traditional sense. There won't be a Project Cortex client, right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's right. And the first part's these topic cards, topic pages. The cards themselves show up in all sorts of interfaces, including Outlook and Teams. So it's kind of in the context of work. I love the topic pages because they're kind of like Wikipedia meets AI. You know, they're
right.
Automatically authored. There is a place you can go to see these pages together, but we won't call that the Project Cortex app.
Right.
You know, it'll be powered essentially by the Project Cortex technology. And then the work that we're doing around the interactive document repository, again, we won't call it Project Cortex per se. We'll be very focused on specific business process, helping people to get the most from the tech.
Okay, that's a great one. So I'm going to ask a reader question now. Chris K. Asked if Microsoft has any plans to use AI to identify things that people do repeatedly in Office. So if somebody does a lot of things, say with using Office Lens all the time, are you going to use AI to somehow make it that you make suggestions as to how they can have a better workflow?
I love it. It was an excellent suggestion, like really, really nice suggestion.
Yeah.
I would think of it this way. We don't have any plans right now to do that, but it's a great feature suggestion. I would also differentiate between AI and automation in that the AI question there is like, can you identify what people are doing? Then what would be even more interesting to us is could we automate some of that? And at the conference this week, we introduced what we call Office Scripts. That's
right.
Pretty exciting for us.
Yep.
You know, there have been scripting languages, but for a long time, people have been wondering what's happening in VBA. How do we think about macros going forward? This really is our answer for kind of web-based technologies and the future of where we're headed. So I think it's a great suggestion, but I'd like to go even further, not just identify what they're doing. I'd love to automate some of that.
Right. Okay.
I'm going to ask another question for myself. That new Office mobile app that's coming to iOS and Android, I got a demo of that yesterday, and I cannot wait to put that on my Android phone. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and why Microsoft built that?
Yeah, there's so much behind it. So, you know, when we first went to mobile, the basic use case was I would like to have access to my documents on the go. And we spent a lot of time, you know, OneDrive was a core component of the overall formula. And then even Word did some really interesting things, allowing you to kind of see the documents in a way that flowed for your device. So it was really great.
Yeah.
We have since learned a lot. I'll give you one input that is a kind of pretty practical and tactical input, but that means a lot. As we've continued to work with OEM manufacturers of phones, they've said, hey, we love what you're doing. But we find that loading up three different apps, for instance, a little bit cumbersome. Could you think about doing that? As we worked more with customers, they have the same thing. You know, I love Word, Excel, PowerPoint together in my documents, but it turns out I think of that all as Office. That's the way I've been trained to think of it. Finally, the thing that I love the most about the new Office app is this idea of adding actions. You know, we call it micro productivity. And we're just getting started with those. That essentially takes good advantage of the affordances of the hardware on your phone and says, hey, you can scan documents for it. You can sign documents. You have that wonderful demo that we're always doing where you, you know, take a picture of an Excel spreadsheet or a table and turn it into an Excel spreadsheet. Yeah. That is micro productivity to us. And that's the other half of the office equation, that office app equation. There's so much there for us.
Yeah. I really like the productivity suggestions because I'm always forgetting I can do certain things, especially things like automatically turn a document into a PDF that I can sign.
Yeah.
I always think, oh, I have to go home and actually use my printer to scan it, and then I can print it out and sign it, but I don't have to do that.
Very powerful.
Right. Okay. Reader Bugran on Twitter asked if you're going to have any more new incentives for academic institutions who want to move to the cloud.
Well, I don't know of any specific incentives that I'll be creating. You know, the biggest incentive that we're trying to create is cloud-based services that just make it irresistible so that people kind of feel like, boy, I want that. That's where all of our effort and energy is going into right now. So no, I don't know of any specific financial incentives or anything that we're doing.
Okay. I had a few different readers ask me what Microsoft is doing, if anything, to simplify how SMBs can manage security and compliance within Microsoft 365. So we're not asking you to show us the whole roadmap here. Well, I would ask you to, but could you just give any kind of statements of general direction or hints for people who have found that to be a cumbersome thing to undertake?
Yes, they are exactly right. Essentially, what we've done historically is take our enterprise level security compliance, bring it down. Right. It's often too complex. The vehicle, I'll start with first with the vehicle. The vehicle for us to do this is a product that we call Microsoft 365 Business.
Right.
So sometimes we'll refer to it as M365B, but it's our business SKU. This is where we are taking those enterprise capabilities and we're working to simplify them. And we're making them specific for SMB. So the great underlying technology, we're doing a lot of work around administration, management, setup, ongoing monitoring, those types of things. So that is the product you'll see us do this work that the reader's asking about.
Okay. Great. We have another reader question from Eric Beeler, who asked, why does it take so long for Microsoft to bring so many of its Microsoft 365 and Office 365 features to the government cloud? I get this question a lot on Twitter, too. When Microsoft announces something super cool, all the government cloud people are kind of like, yeah, but when are we going to get it?
Yes.
So the question is there any way or plan that you can reduce that delta time between when commercial customers get it and when government cloud customers get it?
Yes. The short answer is yes, and we are working on it. But let me explain a little bit more.
Okay.
It isn't just a matter of saying, oh, we've got a feature here, and now let's put it into the government cloud.
Right.
There is a process that we go through that entails, you know, doing a detailed assessment of kind of what the new features are. And then we actually look at the dependencies that those features have.
Right.
Then we go through an audit process, make sure we understand anything that needs to be addressed. Then we actually move the features into the cloud. Then we do a second audit to make sure that everything's right. And then we go through one more check to make sure everything is working. So it is a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a process.
Right.
We are absolutely, I'm very sensitive to the feedback. They're exactly right. We are trying to shorten that as much as possible. It will never be kind of simultaneous launch,
right. Just
simply because of the process we have to go through, but we are working to shorten it as much as possible.
Good. That's good. I'm glad I can tell readers that because I get that question a lot. All right. Reader Robert Supiro asked, when will Teams and conference room hardware be complete? He feels like some of the features he needs to do Teams meetings with specific hardware may be not all there yet. And I also saw that Microsoft did make an interesting announcement this week about a new managed meeting room service. That's not for everybody. That's for very big customers. But still, I'm sure this is top of mind for Microsoft, too, because you want to be known as the service that makes meetings better. So what are you doing there specifically for someone who feels like not all of the team meeting room stuff is there yet?
Yeah, I would agree. I would say we have been, in some ways, it is a nice problem to have, and that Teams has just blown up for us over the course of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And so this part of the business that is working with our hardware partners to ensure that every kind of component within a broad portfolio is there, is not quite there. We're working on it. here at Ignite, we have a really, in fact, I just was touring our booth, and we have a great layout of devices from all of the device partners that we work with, and they're working really hard. As fast as we can get them produced is what I'd say. The only thing holding us back is literally the physics of getting it all done. Okay. We also introduced, you mentioned the managed meeting service. Right. I love that. We also introduced a new type of device that we call collaboration bars here at the conference. And it's a smaller all-in-one device that allows you to take any screen of any size and turn it into a conference meeting space just by plugging it into a network and to the screen itself. So
what? I didn't even know about this. Where is this?
Yeah, you can actually go see it right over in the booth. It's fantastic. We have two partners, Yatlink and Poly, both have devices that are on sale now.
So it's not something Microsoft itself makes?
No. It's something that we did with partners. But what we found is that there are a lot of these screens all over the place that are not touch screens, and they aren't quite necessarily proper conference rooms. People want to create these touchdown spaces, and our customers have been asking us for just this new class of devices. They've said, this would be nice. We'd like it to fit in at a very reasonable price point, and it's very affordable.
Cool. I didn't know about here. I would also like you to talk a little bit about something that was announced during Ignite called the Microsoft 365 Business Voice. It's a service first for UK and Canada, I believe, and it's about creating a phone system that's completely cloud-based. So I would like to know why Microsoft built that and what your expansion plans are for that. Is it going to come to the US as well?
Yeah, so this is specifically designed for SMBs. We can kind of harken back to my answer related to security compliance, where oftentimes what we've done is take the great enterprise features and just bring them straight down. They're too complex. We actually did our homework this time and determined, hey, we love this voice capability that comes as a part of Teams. We're going to have to simplify things in order to make it work for SMBs. So there is a cap on it, up to 300 seats. So it's a SKU that can be bought up to 300 seats. It brings together phone system and conferencing together with your ability to actually have in you can buy minutes from us if you'd like as well. You can also buy minutes from a telecom vendor and plug that in. Either way is fine. But it is dramatically simplified. So the simplifications come in admin, so a very simple, easy setup and administration, and then also an onboarding step for end users. So we're very focused on how quick it is to get up and running. So the biggest thing for us here is, in the past, you may have seen us like do this big announce like, ta-da, it's here.
Yeah.
And what we're learning is like, this is a place that we're gonna have to learn the formula a little bit. And so we decided to start with these smaller markets where we could really get our arms around and work with partners very carefully. Yeah. And then as we start to feel like we know what we're doing, because we're finding that this product, to get it right, isn't just the technology, it's the partnerships with telecoms, it is those folks who know how to go in and get it set up. Once we get that right, we will expand.
Okay. We have one more question. This is kind of a zinger. Reader Jason Perlow, who happens to be a friend of mine, but I didn't ask him to ask this question. He said, I am a partner. I would like to know what Microsoft's pitch is to get these people who are still on on-premises hosted Exchange to go to the cloud. He's like, I don't want them to stay on-premises. I don't care what they want. I want Microsoft to give me a pitch that I can make to them to get them convinced that they should go to the cloud.
And this is Jason who asked.
Jason.
Yes, Jason. I'm with Jason. Jason, wherever you are, we're with you. There is this long tail of hosted Exchange out there.
Right.
And, you know, the things that we've been doing is trying to really make the product better and better and better and really have the value prop sing for us. We're also trying to make it a part of this broader approach to life that we call Microsoft 365 that I know you know a lot about. Right now, we're not doing a lot to necessarily go in and create sticks to push people off. You know, you have carrots and sticks.
Right.
We've just decided that the carrot is the way to go here. And so we're doing our very best with the product and everything that we do around go-to-market. I definitely sympathize with Jason out there, where we would love to see them move as well, because we just feel like it's a better experience. Yeah. It's more economical. You know, lots of reasons to do it. I am meeting here at the show with a lot of people who are helping me understand why they're still in that situation. So we're trying to make sure we go deep with them.
And I feel like Microsoft's pitch right now is, we'll meet the customer where they are. If they want to stay on premises, we're not going to pull the rug out.
That is correct. You know, we are. I think that makes us different from many cloud vendors out there, and that we want to meet you where you are and say, again, if I could give carrot and sticks, we're going to be all about carrots here in all of these types of scenarios.
Well, Jared, thank you so much for doing this. It was really fun talking to you as always.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
And this is your first MJF chat completed. Jared Spataro, Corporate Vice President, Microsoft 365. Here we are.